Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. Today we're going to revisit a show from a couple of years back about the history of some places of note in Utah that have gone by the wayside. At the time this show aired, back in 2017, a recent addition to the list of once great, now gone local haunts was the historic downtown eatery Lamb's Grill Cafe. George P. Lamb opened the restaurant in 1919 in Logan, but in 1939 it moved to Salt Lake City's Main Street and quickly became a staple of the downtown dining scene. It didn't take long for the restaurant to become an institution of sorts. Through the decades, politicians, business leaders, judges and lawyers, newspapermen, and even Mormon church leaders were among the many downtown denizens who frequented the eatery. For a quick counter meal, an hours-long lunch, or a coffee on the run. Following an ownership change in 2011, and after some managerial and alcohol license-related woes, the almost 100-year-old business closed up shop for good in May of 2017. Not long after that, I explored the history and legacy of Lamb's Cafe and filed this audio report. The sound of workmen dismantling some of the century-old fixtures at Lamb's Grill Cafe on Main Street in downtown Salt Lake City. All of the furniture and various trappings from the now-defunct restaurant have been sold, and after being refurbished, will be part of a new venture set to open in Orem before the end of the year. But Lamb's, for years heralded as Utah's longest-running restaurant, is gone for good. John Spiros owned and managed the business for more than three decades after taking over from his father, Ted Spiros, who was a partner of the restaurant's founder and namesake.
Well, Mr. Lamb started the restaurant, just briefly, a brief history. Mr. Lamb started the Lamb's Grill. He bought the commercial grill in Logan, Utah, and it was the first Lamb's Grill. He opened on February the 22nd, 1919, Washington's birthday, and he was in Logan until 1939. In 1939, where Lamb's has been ever since, was vacant. It sat vacant for 6 months. The landlord went up and got Mr. Lamb and said, George, it's time to move to the business district in Salt Lake. So Mr. Lamb came down, looked, decided to move. He moved into this location in 39. My father became involved in the restaurant in 1941. And in fact, my dad was working on the chain gang at Kennecott, and he was coming into Salt Lake at nights to wash dishes for Mr. Lamb as a second job. Well, Mr. Lamb got ill, had to go in the hospital for a two-week operation, asked my father to take over the restaurant, take a leave of absence from Kennecott, and my father did, and when Mr. Lamb got out, my dad had done such a great job, he gave him 25% of the restaurant on a handshake. From there, the rest is history. They worked together for 35 years as partners and literally built Lamb's into what it became.
What Lamb's became was more than just a restaurant. Located in the heart of the city's historic business and legal district and just two blocks from the Mormon temple, in its heyday, Lamb's was arguably the center of civic life in Utah's capital.
Gus Backman, who was the first president of the Chamber of Commerce, used to sit on the counter. The Chamber of Commerce of Salt Lake City was formed at the counter at Lamb's Grill. At lunchtime, every principal in the city was here. Bankruptcy court judges, federal court judges, circuit court judges. Every lawyer in town that wanted to sit next to Judge Willis Ritter was in town asking to be seated close to Willis's, Judge Ritter's table so that, you know, they could be seen by him. I had to know which law firms were against each other in court during a particular week so that I could seat them at opposite ends of the restaurant when they came for lunch on any given day because they couldn't be too close and overhear each other's conversations. So it was an interesting place to be.
From my recollection, there were two elements or two parts of Lamb's as far as the newsroom was concerned.
Mike Korologos was one of the various reporters, copy boys, editors, and publishers who spent many hours over the years at Lamb's. The building the Salt Lake Tribune occupied from 1934 to 2005 was located just four doors to the north, and because of that proximity, Lamb's served as a kind of second office for the newspaper's staff.
The big hitters, the suits, the editor, executive editor, Arthur Clarence Deck, O.N. Malmquist, the political writer, Bill Patrick William Patrick, the medical writer, And one or two of the other big hitter reporters would always sit at this large table in the back of the room. It sat maybe 12 people, something like that. And among that group would come in casually. I don't think it was any scheduled event, but your city politicians would come in, the mayors would come in, city councilmen, and the heavy hitter attorneys. Don Holbrook from Holbrook, Jones, Waldo Holbrook, and McDonough. And they would sit and just chat, and nothing formal, nothing big. And I remember the editor of the Tribune, my boss, Art Deck, would always stop at the wire machine before he'd leave for Lamb's to go get his, always have a sliced chicken sandwich on white bread and potato chips, but that's a whole other story. He would read the wires, AP wire, the UPI wires, Reuters, whatever we had, and then he'd go and regale the gathering at the big table, being the Facebook of the day, telling of the hot news tips that just came on the wire 5 minutes ago, and this is what happened in Washington or Moscow or wherever the news was. So people would gather there. That's the big hitters. Those are the suits, the worker bees. We always sat at the counter, had a quick lunch, had to go back to work.
Tribune columnist Paul Raleigh says he went to Lamb's almost daily before the paper relocated to the Gateway development in 2005. Among the many tales Raleigh has from his decades-long love affair with the restaurant is one about a perhaps more unified time in Utah politics.
Back in the 60s and 70s, the chairman of the Democratic Party for a number of years was John Class, and he was a really successful banker downtown and a substantial guy. And the Republican chairman was Kent Scheer, and he was an attorney. So they were the opposing people, and they politically battled and had their fights and had their disagreements. But every morning at 10 o'clock at Lamb's, you could see John Class and Kent Scheer in there having coffee together, the Republican icon and the Democratic icon, chatting and talking, and they were best friends. And they'd meet there every day, 10 o'clock, at Lamb's Cafe. I can't even imagine that happening today.
Paul Raleigh says that Lamb's was a place of contradictions incarnate, from Tribune publisher Jack Gallivan having amicable conversations about his campaign for liquor by the drink with Mormon church officials, officials who respectfully disagreed with his position, to people from very different stations in life sitting side by side at the lunch counter.
Calvin Rampton, you know, the great governor back in the 60s and 70s, he liked sometimes to go down to Lamb's and sit at the counter by himself just to get away from everybody else and just to get away from all the power brokers that he dealt with all day long. And he'd go there by himself when he was governor, and he would sit at the counter. And I remember times when I saw Governor Calvin Rampton sitting at the counter having a bowl of soup. And next to him was a homeless guy who just, you know, walked in off the street and, you know, gathered up enough money to buy himself a sandwich or a bowl of soup or something. And he'd belly up to the counter next to Cal Rampton, and the two of them would be sitting there, and they'd often have a little conversation.
Longtime owner Spiros says Lamb's was the place Salt Lake City's first Olympic bid was conceived of as a marketing idea rather than something its proponents wanted to actually win. Over lunch in the early 1960s. It was a place where reporters would meet sources, where business deals were closed and downtown plans were hatched. It was friendly territory, common ground for otherwise opposing sides, and, maybe above all, a classy place to eat.
The charm of Lamb's was you'd walk in there and you just felt like it had been there forever.
It was just a throwback. It was a throwback the day it opened, for heaven's sakes, and that was its shtick.
Yeah, they always had cloth tablecloths, and the menu never changed. It was the same menu for 40 years. I mean, the 40 years I went there, it was the same menu, and I'm sure it was the same menu before that.
They'd have specials on Thursday, lamb shank and some other things on Fridays, fish on Fridays.
And everybody had their favorites. You know, I liked their salmon. And on Fridays, they had tapioca pudding, which was to die for. And, you know, one of my friends always had liver and onions. I could never understand that.
And the other thing I miss is the food. Just the food that we cooked was so basic, so well done, so tasteful. It's what I ate my whole life, and now I don't have it anymore, and I miss the food that I ate all my life.
We're losing a valuable piece of history, of nostalgia, and darn good food. But, you know, times go on.
And it was almost like a family environment. And I frankly can't think of anything that's like Lamb's anymore.
Again, that was Salt Lake Tribune columnist Paul Raleigh, longtime Tribune reporter and manager Mike Korologos, and Lamb's owner Ted Spiros. The National Restaurant Association says that there were 5,264 restaurants and bars in Utah in 2018. So why do some legacy restaurants, those older historic businesses that have spanned a few generations, why do some of those have a harder time sticking around while others continue to thrive? Ruth's Diner up Emigration Canyon is among the oldest restaurants in Utah. Back in 2017, as part of our look at long-standing Utah eateries, producer Emily Means spoke with Tracy Nelson, the owner of Ruth's Diner, who told Emily that the key to the success of her business was Ruth's staying true to its roots.
So, Tracy, this is the 87th anniversary of Ruth's Diner. Congratulations. You're still going strong after all these years. What is the secret to the diner's success?
I think location, I think longevity, and consistency. A lot of things we haven't changed over the years. We have same, it was one of our same staff that have worked here for 25 years, and they make a big difference.
What has changed? Has your menu changed at all?
Some things have changed. We've go through cycles of what doesn't sell, but we keep a log, and everything that does sell remains on the menu.
What is the best-selling item on the menu?
Oh my goodness. I say biscuits and gravy, chicken fried steak and eggs. Our meatloaf is very popular. And, oh my goodness, probably Grandma Claire's mac and cheese. They're comfort food. And I think people like to come where they can feel like they can get comfort food and nothing really fancy. We don't try to be something that we're not.
Are there any trends you've had to keep up with or challenges you've had to overcome that have almost tanked Ruth's?
No, I think finding really good help, finding people that want to be here. And I think that's always our biggest hurdle with Salt Lake growing, with the number of restaurants that are evolving downtown. And we're a seasonal restaurant. We serve so many more people in the summer that we have a staff of almost 100 in the summer. And down to 35 in the winter. So that's probably our biggest hurdle is staffing.
So what does the future of Ruth's look like?
Our son just graduated from culinary school, which makes me very proud. And he's working in the kitchen, working with my husband, who is the other owner. And hopefully someday he'll take it over and we can retire. But we'll always be a part of Ruth's, always, so. You know, it's a big family.
We all have that place, the bar that makes your favorite drink just right, or the breakfast joint that you've eaten at so many times the kitchen knows how you like your eggs. KCPW listeners Ben Ling and Jeremy Harmon shared their memories of their spots, what it was like the first time they walked in, and how they felt when the eateries closed their doors for good.
My name is Ben Ling. I live near the Park City area, and I remember Yellow Snow Ice Cream. It was an ice cream shop on Sidewinder Drive in Park City, and that's close to the rail trail. And when I was teaching my son how to ride a bicycle, we would ride on the rail trail, and then afterwards we would go to Yellow Snow Ice Cream. And we just happened upon it one day, just after our ride, and just thought, oh, this would be a great treat. And it became like a routine for us. Even though the shop was only open for a couple of years, it became a really important part of our summer. I think we would go there like two or three times a week. And the ice cream there was so good because Sean McLennan, the owner, would make it fresh every morning, and he didn't use any fillers, and it was so creamy and rich that I think I became a bigger fan of that ice cream shop than my son did. But unfortunately, making ice cream like that is really expensive, and probably having a shop in the Park City area is also expensive. So they went out of business after a couple of years, and now, like every summer, whenever I'm in that area, I just think, oh, I wish Yellow Snow was still there. Some of the great things about that shop was that it was, he was really trying to become a local institution. Not only did he have the humorous name, but he really supported the local schools. The best back-to-school night that my son's elementary school ever had was it featured little free samples of Yellow Snow ice cream. And I just remember there was this huge long line of parents and children at the school just waiting to get these tiny little scoops of ice cream. And he went through gallons of ice cream that day. So, I mean, he was on his way to becoming an institution, but fortunately he didn't make it. And so now there are still good ice cream shops around, but none of them will ever hit me the way Yellow Snow ice cream did.
My name's Jeremy Harmon. I've lived in Salt Lake City for about 20 years. Bill and Nada's was one of those places that I kept hearing about when I moved here that I needed to check it out. So one night I didn't really have any plans or anything to do, so I decided just to go. So I went by myself, and at the time I was kind of going through this phase where I was really into just listening to a lot of like old 60s, super twangy country western stuff and things like that. And I combed my hair appropriately. You know, I had a big greasy pompadour and would wear these old style western shirts that had the big flowers embroidered on them and stuff like that. And so that's how I was dressed when I went, because that's kind of how I dressed every day. But anyway, I go over to Bill and Nada's, and I get there, and you know, I'd driven past the place before, so I knew it kind of had a divey kind of feel to it. And so, you know, I pull up, I'm walking in, and as I put my hand on the front door and open the door to go in, the trumpets at the beginning of Johnny Cash's Ring of Fire come on the jukebox, and it was the serendipity of that moment. It was just such a funny thing. I was just like, yep, this is my place. I walked in, I remember it's kind of like a movie, like everybody looks up, and there were some folks in there that I knew from classes at the U and stuff, and so, you know, I kind of got a wave from people just right off the bat. It just was cool. Went in, and I don't remember exactly what I ate, but every time I went there, I got roughly the same thing, which was just, you know, you could get breakfast all day and all night kind of stuff. So I would, you know, probably just had fried eggs and hash browns or something like that. But there were these great murals on the walls of kind of like Western scenes. And I don't know. The place just had so much character, and, you know, just kind of your classic greasy spoon. I just kept going back. It wasn't that the food was bad, but the atmosphere of the place was definitely better than the food. And so, for me anyway, so that just kept me going back. The ring of fire, the ring of fire.
The taste of love is sweet. Again, that was listener Jeremy Harmon recounting his love affair with the inimitable Bill and Nada's Cafe, which I've been told over and over again was really Bill and Nada's. I'll never buy it, though. I miss that place a lot, too, Jeremy. There have been some other notable closures since this program first aired. For example, after 50 years, Big Ed's, the dimly lit one-room breakfast, lunch, and beer spot just off the University of Utah's campus, shut down suddenly and mysteriously just a month after this show was originally broadcast. Big Ed's had great chili and a painfully good, and let's face it, just painful, breakfast dish called the God-Awful. This past August, the restaurant was born anew, albeit in a different configuration, as Public Ed's, the fourth location for Salt Lake City's public coffee roasters. And in case you're wondering, they kept the God-Awful, the chili, and the beer as part of their menu. So what are the places gone by that you miss the most, that maybe represented a certain moment in your life, or that had something that you just can't find anywhere else? Tell us at the In the Hive show posting over at KCPW's Facebook page, or email us at comments@kcpw.org. To get the ball rolling, I'll throw out two random Salt Lake City spots that are no more. The Den was a cozy, hidden coffee house on 3rd South behind the Other Place restaurant. And then Henry's Inn was a bar on State Street and about 27th South that was kind of divey, but that was part of its charm. And beyond weighing in with the places you remember, how about telling me what stories I ought to be looking at next? Politics? History? Crime? Or maybe you've got a news tip about a specific story? Again, send an email to comments@kcpw.org with the subject line Hive, and I'll get in touch. In the Hive is a production of KCPW Public Radio in Salt Lake City, a listener-supported, independent news and information resource. The show's theme music is by Andrew Shaw. Find podcasts of this and all of our local programs at kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. Please join us again next week.